Morning. It is Monday, May the 8th, and this is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means. And Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, members, today we have a presentation by the ESDs followed up by a couple of the school districts. This is just to, there's been interest among some members and one of the chairs about sort of the role of ESDs, what role they play in providing programs. And varies significantly across the state and how they see their roles and their member districts see their roles, and I hope that comes out today. There'll be some discussion around the governance, what services are provided. There are two ESD superintendents here along with their executive director, and then we've asked two school districts, one who has opted out, Salem Kaiser, and in another district superintendent that will talk about the relationship and other factors around their relationships with the ESDs and how what they see their role to be. So Mr. Peterson, if you can come up with whoever you want to bring up.
Come on up, both of you.
In terms of the presentation, there is something up on your on OLIS. What it really, and it's also the hard copy in front of you. These are the annual reports from each of the ESDs or biennial report summaries, so you see the wide variety of services they provide. And then on OLIS, about 44 pages in, there is a presentation outline that I think is what they plan to, or at least a series of questions and stuff that they want to cover. So,
okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith-Warner, and members of the committee. Thank you, Mr. Wilson, for facilitating this for us. We're pleased to be here. I'm Gary Peterson, Executive Director of the Organization of Education Service Districts. Just started in September. Prior to that, I was 7 years as Superintendent of Columbia Gorge ESD, Hood River and Wasco counties. With me this morning, I'm pleased to have Tenille Weatherall in her seventh year as Superintendent of South Coast ESD. And on the far left, Mark Mulvihill, Superintendent of Intermountain ESD, in his 10th year. So together, we have several years of ESD experience from multiple perspectives. As Mr. Wilson talked about, we do have an outline that we're going to talk through. We did provide you a hard copy of some summaries that we put together. The annual report that actually goes into the to ODE really is a compilation of hours of service, and that's actually, we didn't provide that to you. I think Mr. Wilson can make that available if you haven't already. But what we did is we kind of, because ESDs, there are 19 around the state, are so varied in what they do, we went ahead and provided a synopsis from each one. Some of them already had executive summaries, if you will, prepared, and for some, this was a reflective, thoughtful process, so we appreciate that opportunity, and I think we've learned a lot from each other and how we do business as part of that. My piece is just to lay a little bit of groundwork around ESDs, and part of that is the chronology. I'm going to start with 1963 as the immediate predecessor of what we have as education service districts now. That's when the legislature created IEDs, Intermediate Education Districts, and that was in response to some history going back, large versus small. You've heard that before, and funding and equity and all those kinds of things. So in 1963, legislature established ESDs, and the mission at that time was, in the statute, to provide maximum excellence in education and as nearly equal educational opportunities for all children of this state as is feasible under local control. So you can hear those equity and equitable funding pieces even going back to that time, so in 1963. We were ESDs, or IEDs, I will say, until 1977, when the name became changed from intermediate education districts to education service districts. At that time, 1963, there were 29 IEDs, and then in 1993, there was consolidation down to 21, and since then it's morphed down to 19 across the state. A key part of the timeline happened from the fiscal perspective. I know you folks deal with fiscal fiscal matters happened in 1997 when the tax bases, in going back to 1963, IEDs each came with a tax base that was established based on the history. I don't understand exactly how tax bases were formed and established, but they had tax bases in 1963. Those stayed in place until 1997, at which time they were converted to tax rates. And I think that's a significant piece of information for you, because those tax rates that were established in 1997 exist to this day. Now, there's considerable variance in those tax rates across the ESDs. And again, it's that chronology and the history that goes into that. Lowest in the state for tax rates right now is 10 cents per thousand. That happens to be in High Desert ESD. The highest in the state, $3.80 per thousand in Wallowa ESD. Mr. Wilson has those numbers for you if you're interested in, but a considerable range, and of course, depending upon the property values in an individual region, that generates considerable variable amounts of money. And that created then inequities, which was flew in the face of the idea of ESDs. And so then in 2001, the legislature then equalized ESDs, and they became part of the state school fund. And at that time then, 5% of the state school fund was appropriated to ESDs on an ADMW basis, just like regular state school funding is now. That did change. That 5% has changed over the years during times when the resources have been tight. A couple times there have been modifications in that 5%, so that now that it's 4.5% of the state school fund. Just a couple other things for me to mention. One is that in 2005, the legislature established what's called the local service planning process. It's in statute. It requires how we make decisions in terms of distribution of the services we provide to local districts. And I think Mark's going to talk most about the local service planning process within his ESD. The other piece that I would call your attention to is that beginning probably in 2011, but later than that, ESDs have taken on a significant role in other areas outside of the statutory responsibilities for local service plans. And that has to do with early learning and early learning hubs. When that system was created in 2011, many of our ESDs are now responsible in some way, or the backbone, if you will, for early learning hubs. Many of us also have STEM hubs. Many of us also are responsible and actually, I think most of the regional achievement collaboratives, an initiative the Chief Education Office are now running, being run by education service districts. And so what's happened over time is that these other kind of regional entities or regional initiatives looked to ESDs as regional entities, as established regional entities with a variety of positive assets in that regard. We have publicly elected boards. We're subject to state budget process. We have open meeting laws. Our books are audited, we have professional leadership. All those kinds of things led to these other initiatives becoming part of what the ESDs do now, and that shows up in various ways with our work. With that, I will be quiet, and I believe at this point in time, Dr. Mulvihill is going to speak.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, before I get started, I just wanted to make it clear. I had the opportunity a number of years ago work for the University of Oregon and working with administrators, and one of the most brilliant ones that I got to work with is sitting across from us now. So Tennille Weatherall was working on certification, and I had the opportunity to help her as she moved through that. I like to call her one of my students, but she was she taught me as much as I taught her, and she is a brilliant woman who I hope continues to find other things. We love her in the ESD down on the South Coast, but she may aspire to other things as time goes on. And I just want people to know that I had a personal relationship with one of these people sitting here. So, thank you.
Well, maybe I ought to just turn this over to you. He's your PR man, I guess. Good morning. I'm Mark Mulvihill. I'm the superintendent of Intermountain ESD headquartered in Pendleton. We serve four counties, approximately 25,000 kids in the four core service areas. We serve Umatilla, Morrow, Baker, and Union counties. often was asked the question, what do ESDs really do? And over the years, it's hard to explain that. So what we did about 4 years ago, we went with the idea that a picture is 1,000 words, and we created what I call the map or the cartoon. If you could please turn to page 15 in your documents, and that is the Intermountain ESD local service plan. We call this our map, our executive summary. And it really does provide a quick overview, and that's what I'm going to do today. So it should look have a map of Oregon here with the four counties. That's page 15, if you could take a look there. And again, as Gary said, every ESD is different. There are 19 ESDs. We are very, very diverse, and it's similar to Oregon. You know, you have rural, you have urban, you have large, you have small. We are a, quote, medium-sized ESD in a rural area. We have a very heavy focus on P20 across the spectrum. Several years ago, I served with Governor Kitzhaber on the Oregon Education Investment Board, and at that time, we talked a lot about the state's responsibility to determine outcomes and results and fund it, but that the innovation would be at the local level. And ESDs really can be innovation and change agents. If you could take a look at the map, you see on the front the districts that we serve, but I'd like you to turn to where you have the next page. It shows a map, shows a road going through. And this is an attempt to really articulate how we serve across the P20 spectrum. And again, this is Intermountain, but I think you'd find common elements, as Gary said, throughout the spectrum. So first of all, for this group, of course, you're looking at fiscal accountability in dollars. This map is color-coded based on a budget. So if you look in the blue is the general fund. That's the state school fund. ESDs receive 4.5% of the state school fund. As Gary mentioned, we are considered a district with property tax revenue and state offset. So everybody's a little bit different, but we receive money per student. You know, ESDs roughly $300, $340 per student. So ESDs that are heavily reliant on the general fund have, you know, limited capacity. And so the majority of us have outside revenue streams. And you can see the yellow at Intermountain is very significant. That is state contracts. We hold multiple contracts for the state of Oregon, ODE. The largest one that we predominantly hold is the early intervention, early childhood special education, the regional, basically highly handicapped students that are very expensive students to educate. ESDs provide that equity in staff. So school psychology, speech pathologist, physical therapy, occupational therapy, traumatic brain injury. These are all programs that we provide for our regional districts. Intermountain, an example for us as well, is we hold the state contract for testing. So Smarter Balance, we are the contractor for ODE for that and provide that around the state. We actually provide services not only in Oregon, but in Washington as well with some programs that diversify our budget and obviously build capacity. And along that line, the green right there is our entrepreneurial. ESDs have the ability to sell services to nonprofits and community organizations, government organizations. It's like technology, that's a big one for us. We sell a lot of technology service in Eastern Oregon. We have like the majority of county government, city government. We provide everything from fiber to desktop support to purchasing all the way through. So in this map, if you think about those colors, meaning that yellow is state contracts, blue is the state school fund, green is the entrepreneurial, and then orange is what districts buy back from us, such as human resources, business services. We're the business department for 11 districts. And if you look at the various houses, that's they're color-coded to their funding. So when districts determine their local service plan that Tennille is going to talk about a little bit, that is a year-long process. And it is about as democratic and equitable as you can get when you think about it. Basically, we start year-round, start in the summer with superintendents and board members talking about where do we want the blue distributed in our region based on equity. Based on equity, so that students in Imbler, students in Ione, students in Ukiah with 30 kids versus Pendleton with 3,100. Where are we going to distribute the blue? And predominantly for us, it's speech pathology and school diagnosticians.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Superintendent, your business activities, are you limited in competing with private business?
Yeah, and we try very hard not to do that. We find
had issues in the past of ESDs and printing.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's an example. We do printing. We have a huge print shop. We work hand in hand with the master printers. That's a printing organization in Pendleton, for example. And we find the niches and the overflow. We will not compete. That is a very, very important aspect for me as the superintendent, that we're not in the business to put business out in rural area. In fact, workforce development is a pretty critical area that we specialize as well with our early college.
Thank you. Follow up, Ms. Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Co-Chair. I'm interested in your, back to the page before, you have 15 FTEs doing speech and language. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, those are speech and language pathologists. And so that is students that are on individual education program. If they're requiring speech services, the ESD provides that itinerant staff.
Go ahead. Not ELL type stuff.
No.
Okay.
No.
Follow up, please.
Go ahead.
The nurse consultant and the Medicaid. Can you explain those duties, please?
Yes. Medicaid is a service that we provide all over the region for billing. There's actually two types of Medicaid. There's for students that high-need students that are billable medical. And then there's also Medicaid that districts can apply for and to receive reimbursement if they provide medical type activities during the day as well and trainings. And so we do the billing for them. We do the back office support for that.
Follow up, Mr.
Go ahead.
Does that generate a lot of money?
It doesn't. The one where the student direct service, yes. The one where districts professional development and they bubble in time, no. That used to be pretty lucrative. It's not anymore.
Yeah, last follow-up.
Go ahead.
I have a bill about school nurses. Are you familiar with that bill?
I am.
Okay, and so one of the pushbacks I'm getting is that the school districts don't want to do it because it's too much work and even get penalized. Is that correct? If you do it wrong?
I don't know about penalized. I can tell you that we have a very, very strong relationship with our CCO, and we braid a lot of resources. We've created wellness hubs in our region that provide mental health specialists with no cost to the districts, mental health specialists, oral health program, nursing, and system navigation. And that's basically a fancy word for getting people into the homes to help kids treat with the head lice, get the kid back at school. We use braided dollars through our CCO and public health and the ESD local service plan, part of the blue. So one success we've had with the nurse, our goal is this. Districts should pay for teachers and administrators. They shouldn't pay for nurses, counselors, mental health providers, truancy officers, and the more that we can braid outside dollars to make that happen. And that's a perfect ESD activity. We're going to be the ones to have that collaboration to pull people together to say, all right, we need two nurses in Milton, Freewater, and Helix. I'm going in for a third on my local service plan. Can you go in? The other third. And we have a tremendous CCO, Gobi, Kevin Campbell, who allocates a lot of resources for school-based health.
Go ahead.
I said I wasn't going to do that. And I appreciate that information. I'm going to follow up with you because it's my understanding that if we really implemented a program where ESDs were helping school districts do that, we could generate enough money to provide nurses for most schools.
Absolutely, and there's so many other dollars to braid to it.
Thank you.
And multiple.
Doing it. That's right.
Yeah. But there's multiple funding sources to get it. The art issue is hiring the people.
Thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Wilson.
Just to follow up with Representative Wisnett, we will, if time permits, have a hearing on Medicaid matching by schools. And it's not spotty. Some districts do a lot, other districts don't participate at all or hardly at all. So that's on the agenda in a couple weeks, hopefully.
And that's another activity for ESDs to do all the backbone support and logistics to make that happen. How am I doing on time?
I think you're time.
Okay. Thank you.
Mark, a question. Are you one of the ESDs that has the million-dollar floor?
Oh, I wish we were.
You're not.
We are not.
Okay.
So. We are not. We're a mid-sized ESD, so we are not. We're just a regular part of the state school fund. I just want to add just very quickly, too, that if you look at the map, the key areas of kindergarten readiness, that's a big one for us. We run the early learning hub. We run the ECSE provider. We're the largest early learning provider in Eastern Oregon. Third grade reading, we provide multiple staff development for that in high school. We began the Eastern Promise about 6 years ago in our area. And we're seeing this year 11 students will have their AA degree upon graduation high school. That's our all-time high. So thank you.
Thank you. Danielle?
Thank you. So as these gentlemen shared, ESDs operate through a local service plan. And that plan starts...
You need to put your name on the record.
Oh, I apologize. My name is Tennille Weatherall, and I'm the superintendent of South Coast ESD.
Thank you.
So as the gentleman shared, that the ESDs operate through a local service plan methodology. And that is how dollars come in from the state school fund and then go out to the local school districts. It identifies the operations of those dollars. For months, superintendents in all the region work together on this plan. In my region, we start in September, and we start having that discussion about what do we want the plan to look like? What is it that needs to be addressed this year, given the current conditions of the region? And it's really driven by the local school districts and the local boards, and ESDs were facilitators of that plan. And the overall goal is to ensure equity of service across the region and provide the greatest level of choice for the local school districts. We want to make sure that we're not barriers. The local service plan is not a barrier to accessing those dollars, but rather a conduit to ensure that all students across the regions and in the entire state receive the right supports, the necessary supports, in order to have the opportunity to make growth like other children in the region and in the state. So each region designs their own plan, and then it's voted on by the local school district boards. So the local service plan by statute requires 2/3 and 50% affirmative vote. And what that means is 2/3 of your local school districts in the region have to vote yes. And of those 2/3, they have to have 50% of the population. So I have an interesting situation on the South Coast. The small districts make up 2/3 of the districts, but they don't have 50% of the kids. And the largest districts have 50% of the kids, but they don't have 2/3 of the whole. So what that does for us is that it requires the large districts and the small districts to work hand in hand to create a plan that works for both of them. For all of us. And it's a really awesome process that I wish lots of people could see, because what happens is the superintendents come together with the intent to work for all kids, not just their own district, and to ensure that everybody, every student, every building gets the necessary services that they need. So 90% of that local, the SSF, actually goes into the resolution dollars. That's what they're called, resolution dollars. And 10% goes for administrative support, and I'll talk to you about that. So each local service plan is designed by their community. They have different structures and different methodologies. Our local service plan is three-tiered. Tier one is services that everybody wants. We have our audiologist in there, our birth to three evaluator. It's a small amount of money for us, but all the superintendents, 100% of them, vote on wanting this. The remaining dollars are then divided up by the local school districts, and they order services from us. So they get to decide how much and what they buy. And as a result, there's no service that they have to have. They get to decide what it is that they want. Tier three is any remaining dollars that they don't utilize on services, they can have in cash payments to their school district, or they can keep at the ESD for future purchases. And each district decides on their own what that looks like. for us, that tier two ordering process is huge. It's whatever it is that they want. It's counseling. It's nursing. We have 12. And we have one-to-one nurses. We have school-based nurses. And then we have nurse consultation support. It's speech pathologists. It's physical therapists. But it's also curriculum support, administrative support. We're the business manager for some school districts, the special ed director. It's really whatever service they need to operate efficiently, we will provide at a unit cost that they can afford and the amount that they need. The system allows districts to receive the maximum choice and ensures equity. That's our goal. Every time we're doing our operations, our purpose is to achieve equity and maximum choice. So as numbers of the SSF fluctuate in ESDs, we're just like K-12 school districts. We take a look at the budgets and we say, okay, what can we reduce? How can we ensure that these costs are as efficient as possible? And we reduce as much as we can, because what we know is if we have less dollars, the school districts have less dollars to purchase services. And then the students don't get what it is that they need. So that there's a direct correlation between what comes in and what they can buy and what kids can have and what kids need. So we work really hard to ensure that that price point is as efficient as possible and that we make adjustments just like our K-12 partners. So the 10% side is often questioned by communities and school districts. 10% side is for administrative services. That's for your board, your budget, your audit, your superintendent's office, building fees, insurance, those types of things, things that operate the building itself. Unfortunately, as in my case, I'm also a middle-level ESD with a smaller amount of students than Mark. We have about 16,000 students. It's just not enough to cover the service, the overhead services. And so we work hard to get grants, work on entrepreneurial services, but ultimately we apply an indirect, and that's sometimes of question. We work really hard to keep that indirect as low as possible, and we apply it just to the service that they purchase, not a blanket indirect. And that's something that the districts and the ESD agree with. We put it in the local service plan. It's transparent, it's upfront, and it's a collaborative process. Districts can also opt out of ESD services if their board chooses. There's a legislative process where there's systems and timelines for that. We really work hard through the LSP process to ensure that we design a local service plan where districts don't want or need to opt out. What we found and frequently of districts that have chosen to opt out is that they still come back to the ESD and buy services. They just have chosen to go this other methodology. So that is an opportunity for them if they so choose. I think for me overall, in the last 15 years being an administrator at the ESD, the wonderful opportunity we have to ensure that every child is able to receive the benefit of equity of opportunity is the most important point for me. If you live in Powers, Oregon, where there's 100 kids in your school, you still get to have school psychology and occupational therapy and nursing services, even though you're really far away from those models in a larger town. Mm-hmm. And ESDs do that work. And we just work so hard to be responsive to the school districts and our community in a way to ensure that we're able to offer a wide range of services to have choice and equity.
Good. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The presentation, you bet. Okay, we ready for COSA? Mr. Perry and Mr. Goodall. And Ms. Goodall. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And introduce yourself and go ahead.
All right.
Good morning, Senator Monroe, Representative Warner, members of the committee. My name is Christy Perry, and I'm the superintendent of Salem-Keizer School District. My district serves almost 42,000 kids. And prior to becoming the superintendent in Salem-Keizer, I was the superintendent in Dallas, Oregon. And in Dallas, we had just over 3,000 kids. So I know both from a large district and a small district perspective the essential services that our ESD provides. Salem-Keizer Public Schools is an opt-out school district, but we do purchase services directly from the ESD, but we also receive our dollars in order to provide some of those essential services ourselves through our own employees. So Salem-Keizer receives approximately $16 million in services or dollars front back to the district for similar services. We generally use services of the ESD for early childhood special education, services for our hearing impaired students, and technology through the data warehouse. In the dollars we get back, we then do our own services, especially in the area of speech and language pathology, nurses, occupational therapists, and school psychologists, to name a few. For Salem-Keizer, we have the infrastructure to have those programs ourselves that smaller districts just don't have. While generally a large district appears to have less of a need for an ESD than a smaller district, the relationship and access to partnerships is as important for small districts as it is to large districts. I don't know if that's the agreement of all large district superintendents, but for us in Salem-Keizer, we have a relationship that's mutually beneficial. So I'll give a couple examples. The first is the Willamette Promise Grant that Willamette ESD applied for on behalf of all the districts in the region. At first glance, you would think that Salem-Keizer has large comprehensive high schools. We had lots of access to college level coursework. We have robust AP IB programs, but where we really struggled was in our high poverty high schools, especially McKay and North, where the access was not the same. So Salem-Keizer came to the table as part of the Willamette Promise Grant. We didn't immediately think, oh, we should apply for this ourselves. And as a result, it's brought equitable access to that rigorous coursework. It's not part of the local service plan, but it was a convening of the ESD with small districts and large districts around this grant. What I found is that Salem-Keizer learns as much from the small districts as the small districts can learn from Salem-Keizer in that. And for us, it's really a way to provide equitable access to rigorous college coursework. Another example is our threat assessment system. Salem-Keizer has a well-developed student threat assessment system. We've been doing it for years, but smaller districts did not have that ability initially. The ESD was a convener, and again, it seemed as if it were Salem-Keizer's knowledge, but really, we learned through the partnerships we created throughout the region. We had better partnerships with our local law enforcement out in our rural communities, and often we share kids, so that partnership is important. And then finally, our last real, there's many partnerships. The last one I'll share today is around our deaf and hard of hearing program. Salem-Keizer School District and Willamette ESD for years have had a partnership for our deaf and hard of hearing students in the region. Since this is a low incident disability, our ability to provide services regionally is essential. Over these years, this partnership has built on us providing regular education and then the ESD coming in with a very specialized deaf and hard of hearing specialists. Jointly, we provide this service, and then we open it up to smaller districts in the region because of the low incidence of deaf and hard of hearing students. Because we have a large infrastructure in Salem-Keizer, it would be really easy for us to go in our own world and provide our own services, and I call it take your money and run through the ESD and opt out. But it isn't the right thing, and it isn't the right thing for students across Oregon. Opting out is our way for us to build infrastructure and use the dollars in the way we need to use the dollars. but the partnership and collaboration we still have with our ESD doesn't go away because we opt out of service. What I know about good ESDs is what you heard from our ESD superintendents. It's about building a partnership with districts and being relevant to what students in those districts need. And good ESDs do that, and they provide service to large districts who may opt out, as well as our smaller districts. And it's about building that economy and infrastructure for all students in the region. It really is a partnership model, and as large districts, we should be part of that model.
ESDs can opt out and get, I believe, 80% of the funding that would ordinarily go to the ESD can go to the school district. Is Salem-Keizer the only large school district that has chosen to opt out?
I do not know the answer to that. Our ESD partners probably would, but I know that for Salem-Keizer, we opt out.
And do you believe that the funding is balanced when you opt out, or that the 80% level is appropriate, or should it be 90% or some other percentage?
I haven't done the details around that enough to even weigh in on it. And I was thinking it was closer to 90%. What I know is that we, the money we get, we take and use for similar services. 90. And then we also...
It's 90.
That's what I was thinking. It was 90%.
Is it 90 now, Mr. Wilson?
I'm not sure, but I'm sure getting a lot of shaking heads by...
It's been 90. It's
been 90. It's been 90.
The 10% for administration.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's 90%. And that 10%, I mean... There probably is some argument around you should get 100%, but if a big district takes 100%, it takes away infrastructure and the ability for overhead costs for the ESDs.
Smaller districts, yeah.
And okay. It ultimately hurts kids in smaller districts.
Okay, thank you. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, thank you, Superintendent. So, two things. Number one, so why does Salem-Keizer opt out? Did that happen before your time?
That happened before our time, and the reason we opt out is because we have such numbers of kids that we provide our own speech and language services, our own occupational therapy. We have a department that does that, and we have many full-time FTE. So we take our money to purchase very similar services ourselves with our own employees, and it makes sense for us. But when you think about a small district like Fall City, they don't need a full-time speech and language pathologist. Well, we have 25 full-time speech and language. So it makes sense because we have the infrastructure, and I wouldn't change that decision because we need the dollars to fund the special education services that we've built within our district.
And then, if I may follow up, speaking as someone who is now in a district where you opt out versus a district where you did not, can you kind of compare and contrast that beyond the size? Is there, I mean, that
right.
To me, that would be the obvious answer.
Yep. The in a smaller district, what Willamette ESD does, which is similar to our other ESDs, is they give lots of choice and option. So in Dallas, at times, I would purchase a service from them where I didn't need a full FTE or it was a hard-to-fill position, often around you need a little bit of occupational therapy time, and so they would have somebody that served multiple small districts. But they were really good about when we needed to switch directions and purchase differently, that the local service plan became really relevant. The key is in that design of the local service plan that the superintendents designed together. And so in Dallas, we used, you know, the full 90% of the money that came to us. We just purchased services through them and worked hard as superintendents so that the array of services met needs of all the districts. So in a smaller district, there might be a time you could opt out depending on the needs of your kids, but for the most part, you use those dollars to buy similar services to what I purchase in Salem-Keizer, or I pay for ourselves in Salem-Keizer. Did that answer the question?
Partially.
Okay. You want to keep going?
Well, just, I guess, do you, you know, are there... So now that you are in this district where you do opt out, are there issues about that? Are there things that you wish you didn't? You wish you stayed involved in that? Do you see?
Yeah, no, because I keep closely connected with my ESD, so I know that if for Salem Kaiser, we need to change our path. The key is staying closely connected with the superintendents in the region, and Willamette ESD does that. So I pay attention to what's on the local service plan. I don't try to push it because I know that what the needs are of small districts are different. So I keep connected. That's partly a leadership style of mine, but that's important because if I didn't stay connected, I wouldn't buy into things like the Willamette Promise.
Okay.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, just a comment. I think that if you go back and look at the history, there are not a lot of large districts that have opted out, but Willamette ESD had some problems a few years ago, and many of us who've been here for a long time recognize that problem. Yes. So there was a lot of conversations, and I think that led in part to the conversation and the decision for Salem Kaiser to opt out. They've gotten a lot better. I mean, things are working reasonably well, but there was a time when they were not feeling they were getting their resources of value that they should have, and there were reasons to believe that was probably true. So historically, there's reasons why Salem Kaiser is in a position that not a lot of the other big districts have chosen to do with their ESD.
Okay, Mr. Goodall.
Well, co-chairs, thank you for having the opportunity. I'm Tripp Goodall. I'm superintendent at Canby School District. And I'll just echo a few things that I think you've already heard today. For a district like Canby, we're 5,000 students. And my previous work, I was director of the high school system for Portland Public. And very different to be in a large school district where you have significant FTE that can be applied to your schools. In Canby, we simply don't have the central office staff to do kind of the work that I see that we have through the partnership with the Clackamas ESD. So in our case, I'll just give you a kind of a quick rundown on some of the things that we do through the ESD. We went through two major curriculum adoptions last year. There had not been a curriculum adoption in over 12 years in the district. And so we wanted to make sure that we did it the right way. We worked with the ESD and had ESD personnel working with our staff to make sure that we selected the right materials. We have a teacher mentor program that's established through the ESD. We do quite a bit with technology. We recently partnered with the ESD to hire a technology director that will work with Canby, but also will be working with other consortium members through the Clackamas ESD. We do a lot of data analysis through the ESD. We obviously have significant needs with data going to ODE. We use the ESD as a service there. Our Head Start program and special ed both benefit from the partnership that we have with Clackamas. Professional development for our teachers. We certainly take advantage of that as often as we can. Because again, in some ways, the ESD becomes an expanded central office for us where we have opportunities to do some of the innovative things collectively as superintendents. We meet with our ESD superintendent and come up with some ideas that we know as a consortium we all benefit from. So that's been a terrific part of the partnership. There are some regional grants that we've worked with the ESD around STEM. So in essence, as I said earlier, for a school district like Canby, the ESD is really invaluable. I mean, I worked in Washington State for quite some time, and we have ESDs. There are ESDs there as well. And I can honestly say that there are times when I don't know if I really did access the resources at a certain ESD simply because I didn't see the value. And I think in our work, if it's really about the value and it's about what additional supports you can gain from a partnership, then I think you've got a model that really can work. So for me right now, Superintendent Canby, I can't say enough about what the ESD is doing working with us in a partnership. I know I speak for many of the superintendents in our area, both big and small. It's been a terrific partnership. So,
questions?
Representative Wisman. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't know if either one of you, if the chair would allow to have Executive Director Peterson back. I think this is the first session that I've been in the building that we haven't had a lot of talk about ESDs and reducing the numbers or something like that. So I guess my question was, is are we at the right number now, or is there, I still get concerned about Jefferson Lake and some of the Harney County, the number of populations, and that's where Senator Monroe talked about the minimum dollar, $1 million minimum. Are we really being effective in having these real small ESDs, and are we at the right number? So I don't know if you two want to talk or just...
Rector Peterson, you want to come back?
Sorry, Gary.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
This is sort of like Senator Roblin's loaded gun question that he asked me once before. Let me refer, first of all, Co-Chairman Monroe, to the question about the floor ESDs. There are five of those. That amount was $1 million. When the equalization took place, they were established and they became part of the state school fund in 2005. They were set at $1 million. And over time, that $1 million didn't buy so much, obviously. So in 2015, there was a correction, legislative correction. That amount now is $1,165,000 per ESD, and it is indexed to the state school fund. Now it's indexed both plus and minus. So if the state school gun fund goes up, goes down, it will vary based on that new base of $1,165,000. Those five are, and Jefferson's actually not one of those because it generates more than that on its own by virtue of its tax rate. But they are Lake, Harney, North Central, Grant, and Wallowa are the five that are the $1 million floor or ceiling, depending on how you, and that's a relative term because the ceiling can come in if their local tax rate is high enough to generate more than that, so they become a net contributor to the local school fund, Sherman County being a prime example of that. So the question going back to, is it the right amount? I think if you take a Lake, and I think in the reports, Lake did a really nice job of talking about what they provide to each of, I believe they have four local districts. Lake is unique in that it's a huge geographic area, and so I was at a board meeting in Lake County of their ESD, and their board members come from their component district. Somebody driving from Christmas Valley to a board meeting in Lakeview, 2.5 hour drive, and then going back, and then going to work. He was fixing fences the next day, I believe. But that relationship in terms of the distance that they have to go. And so I think when you look at that number of ESDs, it becomes part of the geography question that we deal with in this state. And that's both urban and rural and how that looks. My sense is that right now that the services that are being provided by the ESDs through the local service plan, given the funding that we have, we are being pretty efficient, I think. And certainly there are maps that would look different, but every time you do that, as I alluded when Senator Roblin asked me this question before, there are winners and losers when you do that. And so you take and remove that service that is now even as much as 45, 50 miles away and move that proximity to 100 or 150 miles away. Have you accomplished anything? And have you made the system more effective and more efficient? And I think that's a... it's a challenging question. It's a philosophic question, but my sense is right now, and that's why we provided those reports, was so that you could see in depth what those folks are doing in their local communities, driven by those local districts and their needs within the available funding.
Since we have one other question, Executive Director Pierce, it's my understanding, is it High Desert the only one that has the different governances as far as having the board be the school districts?
No, Representative. There are three.
Right now.
It came in 2005, I think, in terms of, and again, going back, Senator Roblin alluded to some concerns about Willamette ESD at that point in time, and what we called the pilot governance came in at that point in time, and there were three. High Desert is one. Willamette ESD is the second. Northwest Regional ESD, the largest ESD in the state in terms of student population, is the third. Basically, the alternative governance model works differently for the majority. For the 16 other ESDs, the board members are publicly elected, just as local school members are elected, and generally by zones. But for the pilot governance, I think they're still called pilot governance, actually, in the statute. But their election is a little bit different. The component districts select five of their board members based on population within those districts. And so they select five, the core, and then those five, once they are seated, then they elect four others. And those four others, one comes from business, one comes from higher ed, one comes from social services sectors, and then the third or fourth one is at large. And so their board members are set up at nine, and the idea was to broaden that base, if you will, of expertise that coming in to match, align those needs of the ESD with the needs of the community with the ESD. Now, all three of those ESDs would say that they have absolutely no interest in going back to the other model. That model has worked very effectively for those districts, and I think very effectively for those school districts in that region, because they get the representation, and because it's on population, there's always going to be some variance for the large and the small, but that was the case, and it is the case now when you have zonal elections.
Comment, Miska. I think you've got the people buying the services or the board, and I think that's like a stockholder or something. I think mm-hmm. I think it works in high desert. But that's thank you for those comments,
Mr. Co-Chair. If I could add one other thing, you talked about the number of opt-out districts. I think probably we should just get that into the record. There are six districts statewide now out of 197 that have opted out. Salem Kaiser being the largest. Again, within Willamette ESD, we have McMinnville, we have Newburgh, and we have Woodburn. And then we move outside of the Willamette ESD. We have Grants Pass in Southern Oregon ESD region and Hermiston in Intermountain region. Those have been all opt out for at least 2 years. I'm not aware of any other. The due date for opting out for the next year was March 1st. I'm not aware of any other districts that have opted out for 17-18.
Good. Additional questions for the director? Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And again, I apologize because I usually try to come and watch and listen and don't have my computer with me. I'm a little obsessed with maps. So I wondered if you either have on your website already or could send to us kind of a mapped out the districts by ESD. And then I would like also maybe a list form of each ESD, the name and the number of districts in it and the number of students that represents. Do you have that already broken out, do you think, on your, or could you just send it to us?
We can get that for you. We don't have it in place. And actually, I apologize, our website is down. It's being reconstructed, and it should be up in a couple weeks. But we will make sure you get that information.
And then can I ask also, are there any districts that belong to more than one ESD? Are there any districts that are split between ESDs?
Only if their local district boundaries crossed across regular county lines would be the only case that would be. There are some cases, those are in the old language, the joint school districts where they cross county lines. There's one predominant, the major ESD that they're affiliated with. I think the other piece, actually Salem-Kaiser might be one of those districts that crosses over a little bit on county lines. But right now it's, particularly with the service dollars, if there are dollars involved, districts are encouraged, if their local ESD is not offering that service, to look at other ESDs that could buy that, or could offer that service and make it available. And so we have multiple examples of that, where they do cross over county lines. Again, the priority is for that to come through the local ESD, but if not, then, and I think Representative Wisnett alluded to Jefferson County. Jefferson County, as a standalone ESD, is a case where their capacity to offer many of those services is limited by and compared to what High Desert offers. And so Jefferson often purchases service through for their local districts that would come out of High Desert ESD. And we have multiple examples of that around the state. Central Oregon, I think, is a significant example because of the size of High Desert.
And then okay, I lied. I thought of one other thing. I was also thinking about the Intermountain region and that kind of chunk of entrepreneurship, as they called it, that them, you know, acting as a resource, as a business-ish for local. Do all or most ESDs have that as part, or is that also a function of their size?
I think that all of us have been that look at that as what are those needs in terms of providing services outside of the local service plan. A lot of it is situational, depending on if the ESD has that capacity. It doesn't make sense for us to build the capacity to try to do those services. But if we have the capacity and someone wants to access those, then we would do that. Example I know of Central Oregon, there's some conversation about Columbia Gorge ESD, which is providing services in Sherman County, now providing services to the county extension in Sherman County. So, and again, I think Representative Wisnett alluded to it earlier about the concern about the competition between public and private. Generally, we collaborate, we partner with public agencies that are looking at that finite number of resources. Another example, I think, is in, again, the Columbia Gorge example, all of the internet connectivity and the tech services for Columbia Gorge Community College are provided by Columbia Gorge ESD. Mm-hmm. So there's that integration and collaboration across those services.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Roblin.
Yeah, I guess I would say that we will probably have the conversation about ESD size in the sense that Washington has many fewer with a lot more population. There's a lot of those conversations. We've got STEM hubs now. We've got early learning hubs. We've got all these others that cross different boundaries and create opportunities as well as disopportunities. And so I think that this is an ongoing conversation with regard to how best to solve that. And as we keep layering on different regional situations, it creates problems, I think, in the most part. So I think we will continue to have that conversation. We have community college service districts. We have all these other kinds of stuff that cross over borders and do other kinds of things. I think that the model we have right now with involving all of those districts seems to be working. And I look at Lake and I look at Wallawa and I say they have unique geographic issues with respect to it, and those districts that they're in them feel more comfortable because they have more to say about what happens. And if they got stuck with somebody else, they would have very little say because anybody they go to is going to be much bigger than them. So we've got to have, real careful conversations to make sure that at the bottom line are the kids in all of those districts going to be served better or not, given the opportunities to change. So. And I'm pleased that we didn't have it this time. We've got so many other things happening in education.
Passes really involved nice. In taxes. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Executive Director Pearson, how many of the ESDs, High Desert is one I know, is running the early learning center hubs?
There is a chart in your packet close to the back, I think. I don't have mine with me. I think
second
it may be.
Second for the last page.
Thank you. There's a chart, and if you look, I think it's the first column. That's the column that indicates the early learning hub piece.
Let me
get that.
You'd be missing a page.
Oh, you shorted me a page.
So I think this
I'll miss
is
the test. Look at I'll flunk the test.
Thank you for that question, Representative President. So if you take a look at that, this is something we put together when we among ESD superintendents, we talked about, well, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing with regional initiatives? And finally, we decided we ought to inventory and see what it is. So we put this together last fall. It was updated in March. So you can see the Early Learning Hub column on the far left, all of the ESDs and their role, either as a contract holder through the Early Learning Division or as a partner or having programs or staff responsibility. Second column over the Regional Achievement Collaborative one.
What page are you on?
We're on page 45.
45?
Yeah, 45. Okay. I'm sorry. Co-chair. No.
And can I throw in, so this is just 16 of the 19?
Yes. Pardon? Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
So what do the other three do?
In terms, I'm not sure exactly what their relationship is in terms of early learning or regional achievement collaboratives or STEM hubs.
And I was actually going to ask as a bigger question because both this chart and the thing is 16, and so who are the other three? And what's their relationship with the overall organization?
So there is a packet of their information that was the behind the clip in your packet was the information from the other three. Those are North Central, Grant, and Wallowa ESDs. They were a part of our association up through 2015, and then, in the words of Representative Huffman, not all members of the family disagree, so they are not members, but we did ask for their summary reports as part of the packet.
Okay.
Okay. Additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilson?
I think that's it for today. Next meeting is Wednesday, which will be a joint hearing in Room F with the Human Services Sub to talk about child care, the use of child care block grant dollars, and how the regulations have changed. The reason for the joint is they depend a lot on the child care block grant for ERDC funding, as well as many of the federal regulation changes that are coming down just recently and are being implemented affect the ERDC providers. There's a lot of overlap between the two subcommittees on there. And you're talking about quite a bit of over $100 million in the use of those federal funds in the state.
So this will be a joint meeting with the Human Resources Sub?
In Room F.
In Room F. Any questions about that? Any questions? Okay, that will be an interesting discussion. And thank you very much. And we're adjourned until Wednesday.
Thank you.
Wednesday.